Hello?
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello. Good evening, my friends. It is time once again for America's Most Haunted. I'm Eric Olson. What a pleasure to be here. And with me, as almost always, is the haunted housewife, Teresa Argy. Good evening, Teresa.
Good evening, Eric. And good evening to our guest tonight. We have Sloan Bella. Welcome, Sloan.
Hi, thank you so much. Hi to both of you.
What a musical and magical name you have.
Thank you. It is my birth name and my married name. So there
now,
you go.
Now, I want to create a celebrity medium psychic metaphysician name. I think Sloan Bella would be perfect. Oh, wait, it's taken.
Exactly. Yeah, no, my mom named me Sloan. Actually, odd story since you brought it up, over after the soap opera Peyton Place. She was in high school, whatever, she watched that soap opera, liked the name, that's where I got that. And then when I got married, my married last name is Bella.
It's
so
perfect.
So I searched for a good last name before I married him.
Well, that was good planning on your part. You know, they say women can be rather plotting and conniving, but I say no.
Yeah, well, I'd say you're half right, half wrong. Depends on the woman and depends on the time.
All right, well, what we need to do is give people, for those who spend their time in caves or holes or on Mars, perhaps, give them a sense of who you are. And you are very well known on television. I just was looking at your site, which is very nice, by the way. And there's a video of you making a number of predictions for this year on, looked like, LA News. So, but beyond that, psychic medium Sloan Bella's many TV appearances include the NBC show The Other Side, showcasing her work with missing and exploited children. And that's really how you became very well known. And you've been on, oh, looks like dozens of other shows, but including America's Psychic Challenge, Montel Williams, Rockstrology, Entertainment Tonight, and Inside Edition regarding your communication with the late Anna Nicole Smith. And then lots of cool background here. You go back to your childhood in Toronto. You were as early as 4 years old. You were aware of your abilities, and you were articulating nightly with otherworldly beings and the spirits of those who had crossed over. Very seriously, though, you were runaway at 14 and ended up homeless, which just must have been horrifying and terrifying, an incredibly painful and life-changing experience that led to an understanding of how the soul can become confused and experience repetitive patterns until we release the energy connected to them. And, of course, for everyone listening, please do check out the full bio on the site, on the page there. Lots more information. Gosh, just in your later teen years, still in Toronto, you were already a well-known professional intuitive medium. You were doing readings for Iggy Pop, Gregory Hines, Don Adams, one of my favorites.
Don Adams, and totally. During his sober years, by the way, when I met him, he was sober. I don't know if people know, even Maxwell Smart, Get Smart, but
of
when
course.
I met him, he was, yes, I mean, you and I know this. I don't know if our younger listeners know this, but your younger listeners. But, yeah, he was quite an awesome experience. He had become sober at that point and was sort of questioning his own life. He's fallen out of the spotlight and kind of gone by, you know, left the Hollywood lifestyle, was clearly living in Toronto, and it was interesting to talk to him. He's a very interesting man, but he pondered all of life's philosophies and the theology and his religious upbringing versus what he learned and how he lived. So it was quite exciting for me to be able to engage in that conversation with him and also help him through some of those issues, being, you know, many years his junior. So it just proves that knowledge doesn't come, you know, based on our age, it comes where it comes. And so we should never not listen to somebody because they are so young or so old or whatever the case may be.
That is an excellent point. Here you were a teenager, and by then I would imagine he was at least in his, what, 50s maybe or 60s? I don't even know.
Yeah, I'm thinking 60s. I didn't really ask. I've learned not to do that. Now that I'm getting up there in age, I'm like, don't ask me. But I didn't think to ask him at the time. But yeah, he was. Yeah, I mean, he was far out of the spotlight, and it was. Well, God, when I knew him was probably 20. Well, it's definitely over 20. I forget how old I am now. Probably closer to almost 30 years ago. When I knew him, and I forget when he passed away, in the 90s maybe. But
It's been a while.
Yeah, and so I had conversations with him for probably 6 months, and it would be in like 85, 86 in that time frame, however old he was then. But that's actually when I came across him and when I met him. And incidentally, taught me a lot about the progression of one and one, which we attribute to very sort of logical things, like you get older, you want different. But actually, in his case, he wanted more of a spiritual understanding to what his purpose had been, which I found quite interesting, considering you had a very colorful life.
Well, so, and of course, he ended up being Go-Go Gadget.
Totally.
You perhaps enabled that.
Yeah, you know.
Phase of his career.
Yeah, the phase of his career. But he's an interesting man. I liked him. He's one of the highlights of people I've met, just because of, I mean, he's a very interesting man and very humble man, actually.
I am sure. I've heard very, very positive things, actually, about him.
Yeah,
and
nothing,
I'm
very kind.
Our family just kind of relevant to nothing, but we're just Get Smart freaks. And I've actually passed it on to my kids, my younger kids, not even the older ones. We have the complete set of Get Smart on DVD, and they have watched every single episode. They think he is just hysterical. And, of course, stylized 60s aspects of it they think are really amazing, too. That's their favorite TV era other than, you know, now, I suppose. They love the classic 60s shows.
Oh,
it's funny.
Great. There's nothing like them on TV, and he was such a front runner in that. And with his style of comedy, which is a little bit more intellectual than just your pure slapstick, it was different. It was done on different levels. So,
it was a Mel Brooks show. You know, Mel Brooks was a producer, and he often wrote for it. I think he was the exec producer of that show. So that shows
so witty. That show, yeah, it was. I mean, even as a kid, you were like, "This is just different than the usual crap they try to shove down our throats."
Right.
Yeah,
just a quick complete your bio, just because it's so relevant. Then at just 20, you moved from Canada to Hollywood, and that's what you're associated with now. You're a fixture of Hollywood, but the real key was is you began working with the street kids as kind of a psychic street angel, and that's really how you became very well known.
Yeah, that's actually a passion of mine. The work that I do with teenagers, and actually teenagers in all walks of life, it just doesn't have to be street teenagers. But that's where, you know why that happened, actually? Because I worked at Children of the Night, and Lois Lee, she figured the kids, they're so suspect of authority, police, social worker, you know, because they're in that position. They were never suspect of somebody who was psychic. So I was able to talk to them in a way that was still adult and grown up and guide them without them being afraid of me, because they weren't afraid I was going to lock them up, tell their probation officers, tell their parents. Lois, you know, it was very good for them to be able to communicate with a rational person, let's put it that way, at the time, and not be afraid to lay everything out on the table and be guided. So that's actually where I came in. So I found that is a purpose that I have. I still do that work. I actually work with teenagers now who've experienced death in their life, as in losing a parent. So I have quite a few teenagers that I work with who've lost either a mother or father early on in their life, and help them get past that. So that's kind of where it's transitioned.
It sounds to me like you're almost a greater calling is this kind of broader sense of counseling, and that you use your psychic abilities just kind of as a tool within that.
That's exactly correct. Yeah, you obviously you're going to talk with the people, and you can't just like be throwing predictions at them the entire reading or talking. There aren't that many dead people that come through. And I mean, there are certain people, obviously, that come through. But the readings sort of enable where these kids want to go with their life and what they want to do. and then what I pick up on them, like their natural inherent abilities, in spite of what other people tell them. Because just because you have a desire to do something, when you're a young person and you're lost, you may think you can't do it because of what you've done prior in your life, like being a street kid or being a prostitute or in the sex trade or being on drugs. And I see them differently. I see them from the way that they're meant to be seen, which is the way that their soul is, which is a non-judgmental place. So what they've done in the past is not relevant to where they're going. Like, they don't need to hold themselves back. And I find that people, especially young people, and actually maybe quite a few older people, get stuck in that theory that they have to stay where they were because they were this person over here. And so I try to guide them where we don't have to be that. You're allowed to change, and you can be whatever you want to be. I mean, within reason. Obviously, I'm not going to be a surgeon because I have no skill. But, that's not going to happen. But within reason to where they're going, they don't need to hold themselves accountable over here for what they consider to be bad behavior when it's really just part of their process to get where they are supposed to be going. And people don't understand that because we're very judgmental.
I imagine people find that very liberating and really appreciate it.
I find that if you can continue to encourage that way of thinking, they're able to see themselves in a light that is not self-abusive to them, that does not beat themselves up, so that they can actually calm down and then put into thinking what they want to do. So it's about clearing the past, because we only exist in the past, you know, as long as we're in that moment. I don't exist as a 10-year-old child anymore because I've outgrown that age. So for me to stay stuck in thinking like I'm 10 is really counterproductive to who I'm going to become. I've outgrown that. I've shifted through that. So it's a progression in life. And people, you've heard people, I know you've heard this, I know that you've heard with your circle of friends, people who say, you know, I was a baseball player once, and if I hadn't have broken my knee, I'd have still been a baseball player. And you're looking at them, and you're like, you're 50. Get over it. Have you ever run into those people?
Yes, occasionally in the mirror.
Yeah, exactly. Well, for in the mirror that you run into, which would be yourself, was it a baseball career with you? Was that what?
Oh, I mean, I was half joking. I mean, yes, actually, I was. I was a baseball player, and I did have some injuries kind of at critical time in college, and that, but I've realized not really too long after that probably it just wasn't in the cards for a lot of other reasons, not just due to the fact that I had these key injuries. In fact, the fact that I had these key injuries was probably pretty telling in terms of how my body would have held up under that kind of a, you know, regimen, certainly in the pros.
In the physical.
I mean, I just wasn't built for it, I think, is what it comes down to. But
or,
I was thinking about
word,
other things,
word,
too.
I'm going to word that differently for you, because the way that I would see that is the fact that you got the injuries, because as human beings, we're very stubborn and we're very fixed, including myself, about what ideas we have. Like, wherever our level of knowledge is, that's kind of where we base our goals on. And because you were focused in a certain way, perhaps the injuries came into your life to free you from that way of thinking and move you in the direction you were supposed to be. So I look at it as a good thing, minus the pain you went through probably, but I look at it as a good thing for you.
Well, that could absolutely well be. I mean, that may absolutely be what the real underlying issue was. I was thinking about your broader truth, though, which I think is very wise in terms of applying it to other aspects of my life. I mean, everyone has, or most people, I guess, there's those who avoid it, have regret about this or that or something else, and what may have been, and of course it's our job to try to get beyond that, and then certainly to not let it define us. When I go to my reunions, oh my, that can be very sad. The people who really did kind of peak in high school or college, I mean, God, there's a lot of life left after that. If you peak in high school, holy cow, that is sad.
Yeah, it is sad. But see, they get stuck in that situation because they believe that that's where their validation is. And it's like those young kids I work with, or teenage kids. You, just because you robbed a bank when you were 12, or whatever it was you did that was completely absurd and crazy.
Wow.
I know. That's a cool one, right? We have some.
That's
of those.
Something.
Yeah, I'm like actually applauding them for that. I'm like, that's great. I mean, who can actually say that? But that's the bad side of my parenting skills.
That took some gumption.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's like awesome. Well, actually, an adult talked them into it. But nonetheless, if they stay stuck to that, they will sort of flounder their entire life based on the belief that they are bad from that one act. And that is not who you are. And nor is a flower just a flower that starts off at the ground. It has a whole progression of stages in life, and so do we. And people are very mistaken. You have heard that. You've even heard it with actors where they say, well, so-and-so is a musician or an actor, therefore they can't be a director or a songwriter or a politician or this. Like, we really put people into narrow baskets even when they do well. So imagine if you have this guilt about not being a nice person based on your past experience as a street kid or a prostitute or a person in porn or stripping or thieving. You tend to hold yourself at that level. So you will only meet people who you think will accept you at that level, which doesn't progress you, human being. And we are meant to soar in this life. We are not meant to stay muted. We, all of us, whether you're a migrant farm worker or, you know, a Kennedy, it doesn't matter. We are all meant to soar, and we're meant to soar on our own path, and people cannot see it if they're too caught up in what they've done in the past and how bad that is. And that's my purpose.
That makes excellent sense, and we certainly want to hear more about it. I want to give Teresa a chance because I've been monopolizing.
Yes, she's been very good.
But I do want to mention the fact that we will definitely be taking calls. But I do want to encourage you, if you want to hold on the line, we have some people who are holding now, that's fine, but it'll be a while because we're going to do the interview first, and we'll circle back and take some calls, maybe starting at about 20 minutes till. So you can stay on if you'd like, but you're also welcome to call back. And that number is 347-826-7118. Okay, Teresa, your turn.
Hi, Sloan. I've just been mesmerized by your conversation. I think that it's fascinating how the two people, the two types of people that you were helping were almost the opposite ends of society. You had the homeless kids and the people on the street, and then the celebrities and the rock stars and the actors and all that. I think that's kind of amazing. It just shows that you can be on any level and they welcome what you have to say, and they obviously are listening. The question I have for you is, when you do get spirit communication, and I read on your website that you're clairaudient and clairsentient, but when are you able to talk to specific people like Anna Nicole Smith or any of these celebrities, or even maybe a non-celebrity? Are you able to tap in and talk to any of these spirits that you want, or do you have to wait for these certain spirits to kind of connect to you and to reach out to you?
Well, here's what I find happens. I should say the way that it works for me, because I know for everybody in this profession it works differently. And, you know, I have a son who's a medium and very psychic. It works differently for him. He's a far better instrument than I am, I actually think. So that's me bragging about my kid, even though he will never take the bragging, but you know how kids are. But how it works for me, to answer your question, is let's say I book a reading with somebody and they call up and they book the appointment. I will usually start getting information about their person, whoever it is they have in their head, prior to them coming to the reading. So I will be given information. I don't want to say that they need to hear, but information that, if I can translate it correctly, will be beneficial to them, hopefully. Okay, so we'll say hopefully. I do find that there's a bunch of, I'll call them noisy spirits that come around. I don't know who they belong to until I run into the person. And then I'm like, oh, this makes sense. This person's for you. And then it could be some random person I meet at the supermarket or the gym. And I'm like, oh, this is for you. And then other times, like, for example, with Anna Nicole Smith, and it happens. What I find happens for me, I'll just say this, Marilyn Monroe is a good case, because everybody who does like haunted shows and you know, hotels wants to connect with Monroe, right? I mean, you know, that's a given. And when I try to meditate with her, I never pick up on her. I actually pick up on someone that speaks for her, which tells she's been reborn. She's been reincarnated back. So it can happen like that. I mean, and, you know, actually I ran into the person who says she's her, so that's quite interesting, totally separate and living in a different country and documented. But nonetheless, years before I met this other woman, I never could get Marilyn. I could never get Elvis either. So they don't just come because I'm asking. It's not like they're at our whim. It's more, I believe, and I'll give you another example. I went to a seance of a fellow medium that came from Europe, and this was about a year ago. And they were going to show proof of, like, ectoplasm, which is what you see in the ghost movies that comes out of people's mouths. They were going to show proof of that, so they said. And I did not know these people personally. I walked in the room with another medium. Two of us went to this. And we sat down, and there was probably 30 people there. And all of a sudden, the people, the dead people for the people in the room started lining up in my friend and I. I could see them. And I was like, oh, my God, these other two are not real because they're not talking to them. They're coming and standing in front of us. And so I had no idea that was going to happen. And that's because their loved ones wanted to communicate with them. And so they were coming through based on what the earth people wanted. So it really depends on, like, if someone has something to say, they will find someone to speak through. If somebody here wants to talk to them and they can, will come through, but they don't always show up in the order we want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like maybe you talk to your mother, but your cousin Falcon comes through, and I'm like, well, I can't help that. And in the case of Anna Nicole Smith, she was a client of mine, an actual client, not somebody I just talked to after she died. She was a client, and I had what's called transference with her, which was I lived her death experience for 3 months prior to her dying, her exact death experience, and I had no clue what was happening to me. I just felt all the things she felt. Like I would have to ask my husband to take pictures of my body in the middle of the night because I just knew my skin was not on my body and that I had an infection in my leg and that I had died and that I couldn't find my children. I mean, I was waking up in and out of the state, and that was because I actually knew her and hooked into her energy after her son passed away. And doing so, I could not control the feelings I was getting, but I was being shown her death prior to it. And what really sealed the deal for me for that was on Christmas Eve prior to her dying, I woke up in the middle of a cold sweat about 2 in the morning, and I do not drink and I do not take drugs, so no, I wasn't high for those who think I might have been, but which would be my husband who thought I was like secretly drinking booze behind his back. I woke up and I said to him, I can't see the skin on my face. I can't put my makeup on. I have no skin. And so he was, like, freaked out. I was freaked out because I could not see my face in the mirror. When Anna Nicole Smith died, she, of course, was left for a week before they decided how they were going to bury her. And a mutual friend of ours who lived with Anna Nicole named Sandy was the one who was dressing the body for the funeral. She was there with Larry. She was there for the funeral. She knew Howard. She lived with Anna Nicole for a long time. And she called me on the morning of the funeral and said those exact words. I cannot put her makeup on. We have to close the casket. The skin is off her face.
Uh-huh.
Verbatim, practically to what I said. And then I was able to release it. I was like, oh, it's her experience. Had I not heard that, I'd have been driven insane. Once I knew where it came from, and even I couldn't tell where it came from because she wasn't actually dead up when I was feeling it. But it was being told to me. I was living it. That's the clairsentient part. I was feeling and living her death prior to it.
Now, what do you do in a case like that, especially if it's somebody that you know that maybe that you're close with or friends with, and you get this vision or this you're feeling what's happening, and you think that something's going to happen to them. What do you do? Do you tell them? Do you wait to see what happens? What do you do? I would think that would be mortifying, especially if it was somebody you knew well.
Well, I can tell you, I've made the mistake. I am now more reticent before I speak, but in my own family, and in particular with my husband, and in particular with my stepson, with his son, I actually explained my stepson, I explained his death 5 years prior, and up until that happened, I kept telling him, this is what's going to happen, it's going to happen, why is no one listening? And when somebody actually passes, and they don't listen to you, by the way, they do not listen to you, and when somebody actually passes away from that, and I can tell you that obviously in an intimate relationship with my husband, it stopped the communication for many years after the death of his son, because I was the one that brought it forward, and therefore when you hear it prior to it, you maybe blame the person for saying it. But I'm not saying anything to wish it. I'm literally being given information, and it's non-judgmental, so it comes out of my mouth. That's the problem. I have what I call a psychic Tourette's. I start saying it. I start bouncing around like a monkey in a cage because I can't get it out of my head. That's what happens to me. I try to walk away from people. I try to run out the door. When people see me do that now, they know I'm going to say something to them. Now, it's not always a death thing, obviously. I mean, clearly. I mean, how many people are dying around people every day unless you're in a war? That's not the case. But I have, in my own family life, been able to predict the people that pass away and when they're going to pass away within like a month's time frame of it. And not because I'm particularly gifted. It's just that if you're tapped into the energy, it's like reading a book. The book is there, slightly in a different language, but the information is there. So you're translating it. And so I'm saying it. So, yes, I say it. And then people who've been ill, I've said it. You know, I can see this on you. But, hello?
I'm here.
Hi.
We're here.
Oh, good. I heard click. I'm like, hello?
I put my hand over the phone because I'm coughing and I'm trying to be as unrude as
awesome.
Possible.
I'm so sorry you're sick. I'm so sorry.
I know. And I appreciate it. You're nice.
Yeah, I know it's awful. It's bound to happen, though. It's the season, so it's bound to happen. But, yeah, I think what happens is people don't necessarily listen. I notice that when somebody tells me something psychically, because I have psychic friends, they will say stuff to me, and I'm like, yeah, okay. And then if I want to hear it, I'll hear it, and if I don't, I won't.
You guys have a network, right?
Yeah, well, there's a network. I don't like a lot of psychics because they're full of BS. In my opinion, you know, the ones that you see that are all over the place, they're just so full of it. I'll go up against them any day. For example, a lot of these psychics, and I never ever put this on my website, a lot of them say they have a 2-year waiting list. Well, I'm just going to ask you a question. If your son passes away or your daughter or your mother, are you really waiting 2 years to pay $1,200 to talk to a psychic? Why would you do that? What good is that to you? It
seems silly.
It is silly. And what it is a PR. They all do it to make them seem like they're busy. When they charge like that, who are they actually helping? They're not, because, I mean, I agree charging a fee for your time. And people may debate whether the fee should be from $40 to $200. I'll put that in a reasonable range, however you want to word it, whatever the person is comfortable charging based on whatever their time frame is for readings. But if you're charging $1,200 and $25,000, as I've heard some famous ones do, you're not helping anybody. You're really not helping them. And by doing a waiting list, you're not helping them. So I take clients. People know to text me an email, and I kind of go where I feel drawn to. And here's what I say. If you have a celebrity client who's a billionaire, let's say you're reading someone who's filthy rich, you can charge them what you charge everybody, and if they want to, they'll tip you. That's they'll do. They'll see it, and they'll give you a nice gratuity for the work that you've done for them. You don't need... It's like charging more at McDonald's when you want a hamburger because somebody is wealthy. It irritates me. It's like, why do they do that? But they do it.
That is very ethical of you.
Well, I don't know where that – I'm not even trying to be ethical. It's just funny. And putting people on a 2-3-year waiting list, all you're telling me is you're not really doing the work.
Well, I mean, certainly makes sense. In other words, if a person feels compelled – to go to a psychic, usually, not always, of course, but usually there is some compelling reason. So time is of the essence.
Yes, that's exactly. That's right. But yet, you're going to wait 3 years. I don't think so. By that time, I may be dead myself. You know, please. No. And it's just what it is it's just a way to say, look how important we are. I don't do the work in that capacity. And the way that I do it, and this is just for me and that's why I don't have a lot of psychic friends. I am sort of, I find my friends, we find each other, and they all happen to be very psychic themselves if they don't do it for a living. But it's not just because someone is a psychic that I am their friend, if that makes sense. Just
it
because
does.
They do this does not mean
and
that
I was joking
them.
About the Psychic
yeah.
Friends Network.
Yeah, well, no, I know it well. But it's interesting because a lot of psychics in this community get the wrong perception on them because of what a scam it is, like what the media has done to us. Not me personally, but people, you know, how they present us, the way that Hollywood, you know, I mean, clearly puts stage psychics on TV and then tries to pawn them off as not being staged, when if you've been a producer at all on a TV show, you can tell. And I wish they just allow the real gifts to show through, whether it's flamboyant enough for them or not. But they don't. So people have the wrong misconception of what we do to a degree.
Well, it's a really difficult field to be in for the reasons you just said. You know, the whole notion of debunking the paranormal in general, in the broadest sense, began with the debunking of psychics, you know, back in the late 1800s. I mean, that's how that whole thing came about, because you had people who were manipulating others, and as you well know, I find the kind of intersection, I guess is how I think of it, in a sense, if you're good enough at the cold reading or the hot reading, which technically isn't being a psychic, but if you're good enough at it, aren't you in effect still giving relevant information? And it seems to me there may be some sort of intersection there between those who are really talented at the hot reading, cold reading type thing, which again is technically manipulation, or at least that's how it's perceived of people,
right.
versus the actual, whatever that means exactly, actual psychic abilities. It seems to me there's probably an intersection there between those two things. And because, you know, you said it yourself, not all psychics are the same. There's not like it's not like it's an objective thing you can literally measure. There's not a scale. Ah, here's Sloan. She is a 92 on the psychic scale, that kind of thing. You know, I mean, it's all pretty subjective anyway, and no one is perfect, obviously.
Oh,
sometimes
no,
your information is better than in other times. So but my point was, it's a very difficult field to be in, and for someone to stay in it and be successful and be respected for as long as you have is obviously a very good sign, because it's not an easy business at all. The first tendency of most people is to assume you're a fraud, and that's probably
and
very
insane.
Difficult to deal
yes.
with.
Yeah, it actually, I didn't realize it till a very good friend of mine told me. She's older than me and has grown kids, and she's a psychic and a medium. And she's been in the paranormal her whole life. And she, when my kids were little, they were so proud of me. And she said, when my one son turned 12, she goes, it's just going to change for you. They're going to grow to hate you. And I said, why would you say that? And she said, because people are going to start telling them what you are, and it's not going to be flattering. And that, you know, I have one son that just will not acknowledge what I do. He says, well, I can do what you do. And I'm like, then sit down and do it. He won't go there. And my son, who is psychic, pretends he's going to be like a construction worker, a blue collar worker, because he doesn't want to be a psychic. But yet privately around his friends all go to him for readings. They all go, you know, but he won't acknowledge it to me because he's so angry at the way he was treated in school because his mother did this. You know, your mother's going to go to hell. You're going to do this. You're going to do that. She's full of she's full of prunes. She's full of
all that stuff.
All
well, you know
stuff.
What that sounds like? That sounds like a lot of the things that I know Teresa has heard over the years, especially probably when she was younger.
Oh, absolutely. And even now with what I do as a paranormal investigator, as a ghost hunter, for example, my kids are, there's career day up at the school, and they wanted to make sure I wasn't coming there.
Yes, exactly.
You know?
What's that? Yeah, you weren't coming.
They do not want me there. They don't want. They said once the book is out and the book is published, I can come and say I'm an author. But they want no part of it.
That's what my son says. I work at Target. I'm like, dude, stop saying that. It's not that there's anything wrong with it, but why do you keep saying that? Stop it.
I have my psychic booth at Target.
Yeah, no, it's insanity. They don't like the ridicule and. My thing, it's so funny. I was at a pitch meeting for a show with a friend of mine. She just called me in to go with her. And these executives, they sat there, and one of them looked right at me, and she said, well, how do we prove that you're psychic, not just me, but there were five of us, that you're psychic to the viewers? And I said, I don't know. How does Joel Osteen prove that there's a God, but yet I see him making millions of dollars writing books and books and books, and apparently his churches are filled. So why don't you go ask his parishioners if they've actually talked to God? But they seem to believe. So why don't we just go on that premise that you can't prove it? You either believe or you don't. You know, and that's the way I feel about it. You can't prove God, yet there's synagogues, temples, and I mean, I have my belief, and I believe what I believe because I have faith and experience personally. But not every person who's doing that does. But yet it doesn't stop them from engaging in it. So I've never understood this need to prove it.
Logically, it's would be extraordinarily difficult, if not impossible. I mean, if you're going to prove it, quote unquote, from a scientific standpoint, then we were talking to Josh Gates, who does Destination Truth, and now he's got a new show on sci-fi. So he's an investigator and a world traveler, mm-hmm. and we said, you know, so what are your beliefs at this point? And he said, well, I'm really pretty agnostic. I'm kind of right in the middle. You know, I'm not sure. And we were saying, so what would it take? And he said, well, you know, scientifically, it would take reproducibility. That's the key to it. And the problem with that, as I understand it, from a psychic's perspective, is it's an imperfect, it's an art form, it's not a science, and it's not always the same, and it's not always really clear, and that there is a certain amount of an interpretation involved. And if you're the instrument, then, you know, the condition that you, the instrument, are in at any given time, and I mean emotionally, you know, mentally, mm-hmm. physically, that must have an impact as well.
Absolutely, you're 100%. You're 100% right with that, and it's also the condition of the spirit. Like the person who's passed over, were they a quiet person? Do they speak in pictures? Do they speak in feelings? I have to be able to pick up their patterns of energy in order to be able to convey it to you, and then I have to translate it. So you're right, it's up to me, the instrument, but, like, what if I'm high on drugs when I'm reading somebody? Or what if I'm depressed and I'm feeling suicidal? What if I have really bad PMS and I just think in chocolate all day long? Which does happen, actually. But so what if I'm in any of those moods? You're exactly right. And I understand you're ghost hunting, Teresa, that you're looking, and I do believe there's an element of what people do with that, like the rooms get colder, there's certain actual physical changes when things happen in houses and when spirits come in. That makes perfect sense, but you still can't prove the existence of the spirit the way that they want to, which is why I say it's faith-based. You go to a psychic, and whatever they tell you, you either resonate with it or you don't. And that's that. That is, that's, if you go to a preacher, a pastor, a pope, a rabbi, whomever, but it's, you know, whatever it is you go to, you either agree with the tone of their thinking or you don't. And if you don't, you go about your business and find something that resonates with you. And that's saying when it comes to intuitive readings, psychic readings, mediumship readings, you really have to feel it for yourself to become a believer in it. You have to know. I know for me, it's many experiences. I have no doubt in my mind. So, but can I prove it to other people? No. I can do my work and you can appreciate that, but that's still not technically proving it. So, and there
well, like
problem.
I was saying, to me it sounds like a mixed blessing. I mean, this is something you can't necessarily turn off, and it potentially can cause all kinds of problems, you know, internally and then with your relationships and even kind of your relationship to the world, as you were just saying, in terms of how you're perceived and whatnot. So it's not like this is a, you know, pure gift, it sounds like. I mean, it sounds like it has a significant cost or a significant downside. And I honestly can't imagine that someone who was legitimate anyway, that they,
mm-hmm.
you know, that they would not, that it would take a sense of responsibility, and it would really take a sense of calling in order to pursue it. And it wouldn't be easy. It wouldn't be just something you did for money, in other words, I'm saying.
You can't read that. I mean, if you're going to charge, like, you know, $1,200, I guess you just do a single week and that's fine. But you're not helping anybody, so you are in it for the money if you're doing that. But in it for the fee that, say, a therapist charged, you're not going to be able to do it. I'm usually reading 3-4. I can read 5 hours a day, but I try to only read 3 because I'm out for 3 after I read. Like, I'm completely shut down and out. And, you know, if I read, I can read for 10 hours a day, but, I mean, you burn yourself out. We tend to get illness, psychic people who read, we tend to get illnesses and cancers and our bodies break down quicker than other people because it takes our life force. We actually lose our life force while we're doing this. So you have to really, I eat properly, I don't drink, I don't ingest drugs, I do anything like that so I can keep my body harmony strong. And also, when I walk in a room and I say what I do, I make sure that I'm immaculately dressed, I'm put together exactly correctly, I'm articulate. And when they want to call me crazy, they best think twice about it because they're not going to be able to do it. They're going to have to look really hard and then decide not to go there with me because I'm going to hit them with intelligent conversation all the way along about it. I don't look crazy and I'm not showing up, you know, with missing teeth and crazy wild-eyed, however they try to portray us. I'm not showing up like that. And that is why I do that. Otherwise, I'm not even free to be myself. I have to hold myself to a different way because I'm judged just by what I do, which maybe a lot of people are. I'm just not in their professions. But if I come across well put together, polite, and articulate, then they're more apt to listen to what it is that I do. So I've learned that.
Plus, you're the sexy psychic.
Yes, well, and that was the problem. Well, I was, thank you. When you're almost 50, I don't think it's so sexy anymore, but whatever.
You're younger than us, Bella. You're younger than the two of us. So.
Okay. Well, then maybe I'm sexy to you guys.
All right, well, hey, we have some people who are dying to talk, including someone who's been on the phone literally the whole show. So let's see what they have to say. All right, caller who's been on, you must be on a cell because the numbers don't come through. Are you there?
I'm here.
Excellent. What is your name?
Dawn.
Hi, Dawn.
Hi.
Hi, Dawn.
Sloan, you're fascinating. I had some of my questions already answered, but here's what I read on your blog, because I've been, you know, checking your website out. You had a blog regarding David Carradine, and I was curious if you felt he was still around or if he's still, you know, what is he doing and anything about his passing, because I was a fan.
Okay, well, the first thing, of course, I believe when we cross over, we're not really gone, so we are still living, but we live in a different state of existence than what we're used to. Obviously, we're not in the physical body. But when you talk about David Carradine, I actually do get, and this is a weird thing, right off the bat, I feel like he's at peace right now. That's a weird thing to say because he wasn't at peace on Earth, but I do feel like he's actually at peace. And I almost want to say to you that he's bemused with his behavior while he was on Earth. He himself was, I'm literally just picking this up right now. He himself, when he analyzes how he was as a human being in this space, is kind of amused at his own behavior and how seriously he took things. There's a feeling right now like he needed to be a little bit more lighthearted in life and was not. So he's kind of going over his life process. I think he's very, the other thing I get with him is there's a feeling of, I almost feel like we're not done with his life, like it's going to come around again. And I feel like somebody may be trying to make a movie about him right now.
Or Kill Bill 3.
Are they doing?
I made that up.
No? Oh, you made that up. Okay. No, about him. He's not Kill Bill. I mean, he is Kill Bill, but
he is Bill.
You know what I'm saying. Yeah. He is, but he isn't. No, I feel like someone's going to make a movie about his life. There's still a lot that's hidden with it. And I feel like this is funny. I feel like he had a very sort of interesting sense of humor and pops in and out of people's life and around them right now to try to get them to pay attention to him. And he's actually quite amused at how many people acknowledge that he's there but don't really think that he's there. So to me, this means he's doing stuff like popping in. I say popping in. He's showing up energetically at the people he was close to. And in particular, I'm getting three women that he comes around. And it's like these three women are like a love triangle for him. So it's three of his female lovers is how I would word that, because there's three of them that I see him going between. So he still likes the attention of each of these women thinking about him. He still dotes on the fact that they found him to be like they were in love with him. So he still can feel their attention focused on him is what I'm saying.
In any one of the three in particular?
sorry for chuckling. I chuckle. Okay. Well,
you're friends with his ex-wife, right?
Or yes, one of his Marina. Marina, absolutely. He comes to, I feel with her there's more of an apology directed at her because I really feel like he took her for granted or let her believe that. I think he was, I'll just use this word, I don't even mean to use the word grateful, but I think he was very grateful to her for what she did for him, but he took it for granted and wouldn't allow her to know how much he appreciated her because he felt that that would give her power over him. He had this real thing with power against, like, women with power and in regards to him, like him, the man, and the lover being the woman and the woman having that kind of power over him. So he really had that struggle. And there is a young woman, and I don't know who he was married to. There's Marina. There's a woman that's almost adjacent to her, but when he was like 23 years old. And Marina reminded him of that woman he was with in his early life. I have no idea who that woman is, but I can see her face, and I can tell you she hit him in his early 20s. I don't mean hit him physically. Hit. They were together in his early 20s. And so
one way or another.
Yeah, he fell for her. And Marina reminded him of that woman, but I don't think he was used to her trying to – he took his relationships as power struggles is how I can see from his energy. I can tell you that – and I don't know if I want to say – I don't even know if I want to say this. I don't know when he proposed to Marina because she didn't tell me exactly, but what he – is showing me right now is that when he proposed to her, he meant it. And what he's showing me is he's almost getting down. See, he's very much a flirt on the other side still to let him come through. When he's being good, he's very, very good. This is what he's saying to me. When I'm good, I'm very, very, like, I'm very good. People like me, very charming. But a lot of the time, he wasn't charming. And so he gets down on one knee when I say Marina's name and hands her a rose, almost as though he's proposing to her again. And this must be something he's trying to say, like he either meant to marry her or he was glad he married her, is how I would take that. Because he's sort of referencing when he proposed to her. So it wasn't a mistake, but I think he may have told her, he was mistakenly married to her or something. Like, I think he got mad and was mean is what I'm saying. But now I'm feeling his personality go back and forth.
Amazing. That's amazing.
Wow,
stuff.
That is. That's amazing. Thank
right,
you.
Well, is that good, Dawn?
I just hope there's a movie that comes
out. Only 11 minutes, and we'd like to
no,
get
good,
as many
thank
callers.
You, Sloan. You're incredible. Thank you so much.
Yeah, that was amazing stuff. That was fascinating. I was a huge David Carradine fan. All right, let's move on to
me too.
Area
Bye,
code.
Dawn.
Bye.
Bye, Dawn. Thank you.
Bye, thanks.
Area code 209.
Hello,
area code 209.
Hi.
What's your name?
Hi, my name is Marjorie.
Marjorie, and do you have a question or comment for Sloan?
Yeah, I kind of had a question about me and someone. His name is Derek. I mean, I guess my main question was kind of like what you see with that. I mean, if you know, do you see that going anywhere?
Okay, start over. His name again?
His name is Derek.
Derek.
Yeah, do you see anything?
Correct?
Yeah.
Yes,
so
Derek, and this is Marjorie talking with us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Okay, can I ask you, because the energy, I'm going to ask, does he come in and out of your life? Because the energy bounces back and forth to me like he's there, and then he's not reachable, and then he's there, and he's not reachable. It's like his mind is elsewhere, so I feel like there's somebody else in the picture with him.
Oh.
Does he come into your life and then sort of disappear, like where you guys aren't talking for a while, and then he comes in and disappears? Because I feel like there's somebody else around him or something taking his attention.
I mean, I do communicate with him, but I don't see him, like, all the time. I mean, I stop for a while or a little bit.
Okay, because I feel like there's a distraction on his end that makes it hard for him to be what I think you probably want, which is a commitment or some sort of serious relationship. I see a distraction with him. I get a lot of sadness with him as well, and I'm going to tell you this. Part of his problem appears to be, this is just from my perspective right at the second, part of his problem appears to be that he's trying to live up to the standards of what he feels his father wants him to be. And that's a weird thing to say because you're like, who cares? But I feel that he struggles with that. And I feel that that struggle causes him not to be present in a relationship. So there's that feeling of I'm not good enough, therefore I have to keep doing other stuff to be better. I think I'm probably speaking like either with the attention that he wants people to pay him and with what kind of work he does, he's always striving. And so there's a little bit of an inferiority complex mixed with an overinflated ego, if that makes sense. It sounds kind of crazy, but that's, I kind of see him going back and forth between that. And I will tell you, Marjorie, if you cannot get anxious about him and kind of step back, I feel that in early August you actually meet somebody that is more to your tone of expression, like to the way that you want to be in this life, but it's early August. And can you tell me, are you traveling by water in August? Do you have, like, is there a place you go to where there's, like, a boat or, like, where people would have, like, say, I don't mean a yacht, I mean a regular boat, where people would maybe camp and go on boat at this time in early August, and it seems to be the celebration around either somebody's birthday or anniversary at that time?
No, I mean, I haven't planned anything. I don't know of anything right now.
Okay, because I feel like that's where you're going to meet this person. I'm sort of seeing casual shorts and sort of things you would go to, like a beach or a camp. But then I'm seeing champagne in a glass, which means it's a celebration. It's either, I believe champagne would be an anniversary in my head. I mean, that's how I pick it up in my head. It's going to be the early part of August for you, and I feel like you have an opportunity to step into something different if you can let yourself do it. You're stubborn and you want what you want. I mean that in a nice way. And you want what you want. But I actually feel this person will not give you what you want. So if you had him, I think you wouldn't like
him. Really? Hmm.
Yeah. I'm
Marjorie.
I don't like it now, but
You have much to chew on. We need to move on, but appreciate the call and much to ponder and contemplate. And if I were you, I'd keep that early August open.
Okay, thank you.
All
Bye,
right.
Dawn.
Well, that was Marjorie. Bye.
Oh, shit. Marjorie.
Okay.
Oh,
630, who's with us?
Dawn.
Dawn? Another Dawn?
Oh, yes, another Dawn.
It is the night of the Dawns. You know, my wife's name is Dawn.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Isn't this bizarre? I mean, you can go 10 years and not meet a Dawn. And there are now three around me in 10-minute period. It's madness, but I don't want to take away your time. What is your question?
My dad died in 2010, and I was just wondering if you can, like, tell me anything about him, like, if you see him or, like, if you can speak to him, I guess.
What's
okay,
his name?
Yes, give me his name.
His name's Dave.
Okay. And, all right. And just give me a birth date. What would have been his birth date, please?
12/26/47.
Oh, young man, huh? Youngest.
Yeah. Yeah.
Too young.
Yeah, too young. Okay. Now, this is kind of interesting because I'm a little bit confused. I feel like that when he passed, it was a little bit confusing as to why he passed, because there's several. I'm sort of looking at his body. And the first thing I go to is his eye area, and I go to the left eye in particular. It's like I can't see out of that eye, or I'm having trouble with that eye, okay? So I think there was some ongoing things with him prior to his passing. Even if it was sudden, I feel that he had signals going back since early 2000, like 2002, 2003, right in that time frame. I also feel – one second here. Okay, Your dad, just can you tell me when he was, oh, God, in your childhood, there was a, sort of a breach in faith with him, correct? Like he lost his faith or he changed his religion or he thought differently about it, whatever he was raised with, correct? Because he's sort of speaking to me at the moment. What I'm picking up with him is it's not what he thought when he crossed over. So I don't know what he thought it would be, but whatever religion he was raised with, this is not what he thought. And I think he told you that while you were growing up. I think he said to you or was reluctant to step forward with what his belief was and what he really thought happened when we passed away. Do you remember that? He's sort of saying when you were younger, he himself lost his faith. So I feel like he struggled in his life with a lot of things on an emotional level, early on in your life and before the age of 11, actually, is what I'm seeing.
Does that make
sense?
Yeah,
that makes sense. Yeah.
Okay, because he's sort of saying it's not what he thought. Your concern, obviously when someone passes away, we have a concern, where are they, where did they go? But your concern for him was actually, like, literally in the most literal sense, what happened to him? What kind of experience did he have? And I feel like I want to tell you that he actually... There was something with his head, correct? With the eye, the left side of his head when he passed, right? Because the thinking was off with the left side of his head.
Well, he was in a coma.
Okay, left side is where I keep going. The eye, left side, okay. So, having said that, he was, the passing of him was not what you thought it was or what you observed. It was really rather quickly for him. And not in any pain, because for some reason feel like you're really caught up in what happened to him between here and there, like in the most literal sense, what happened to him. I can tell you this. In the next three months, are you doing something with your family in regards to your father? Because it's like you're sending him off or sending him, sort of seeing, I've seen, like, fireworks and a party with it, like you're sending him off somewhere, but it's in the next 3 months. Is there something planned in his honor in this next preceding 3 months, even though it's been, like, 3 years since he passed or 2.5 or whatever it is?
I mean, we always do something on his birthday, which was in December, and then also, like, when he died in August.
Okay, I'm seeing it in the next 3 months. I feel like there's something in honor of him in this next 3 months. I also am going to tell you something. I see, okay, do you know who Charles is connected to him? Charles.
No, I'm not too sure.
Okay, because I don't know if you're aware of this, but I get this really clearly. I feel like your dad has three friends. They are still here alive, okay, like on our side, in the physical. That's how I'll word it, because I believe they're alive on the other side. And I feel like they're, for some reason, coming to pay, I want to say pay respects to your father, but it's not because he passed. It's for some other reason. So there's people from your father's past that I feel are going to make communication with you.
Very interesting. Hey, let's squeeze in. We'll cheat a little bit here. And thank you, Don. Is that helpful?
Thank you. Yeah, definitely. Thank you.
Bye, Don. Now
bye,
I can say Don.
Bye, thank
you. Don, were you 630? I'm sorry. I've lost track.
Yeah, I was. Yeah,
yeah,
I'm
okay.
630.
Well, then we're not in any hurry. The last caller has left us, perhaps when we hit the 11 o'clock. But that's fine. Thank you so much, Don, and best wishes to you and to everyone else. What a fascinating hour, Sloan. Really, really interesting. You kind of never know. We've been somewhat gingerly stepping into the psychic arena, really, honestly, for a lot of the reasons that you said. But what an amazing hour. You're very wise. You're very, as you said, very articulate. You have lots of very interesting ideas, and you certainly do seem to have the touch. It's fascinating, don't you think, Teresa?
Absolutely. I was going to call in on my other phone and get myself a reading there, but
and Teresa's hilarious because I was going to call in as Teresa. I did talk to Sloan as Teresa from the other phone.
Three Dons and two Teresas.
Yeah.
Look, I can hear the echo from the phone.
Thank you so much. It was really, really fun. We'd love to have you back on. Really appreciate you talking to callers. And I know I would love to just talk to you more and just get more of your background and your experiences. It sounds like you've had just an enormous number of really amazing, interesting experiences, and here you are interacting with celebrities in the other realm and whatnot, and living this very, very interesting, if sometimes difficult, life. And so I have really enjoyed it and really appreciate your time.
Yeah, we barely scratched the surface with you, Sloan. We'd love to have you come back on because there's so much more to talk about. So please come back on and do the show again.
And we do,
yes,
at
I'd
minimum,
thank you.
Want to refer people to your site. It's Sloan, Bella, BELLA.com. And I know you have a Twitter. If you want to go ahead and tell them that. And Facebook or just
Bella.
Any other contact.
Yes, I'm laughing. It's all Sloan Bella. It's Sloan Bella on Twitter, Sloan Bella on Facebook. I know. What can I say? And
well, that's
is
the way to do it.
That's what it is. Yeah, I'm like, oh, why be somebody else?
Own it.
Yeah, that's right. I own it. You two make me laugh. Thank you so much. And you know, Teresa, I was going to say something really funny. Can you tell me, do you have Irish, like, I want to say Irish craftsmen in your background. Do you know what I'm talking about with this?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, no, because I see some of them on the other side, but they're building for me as I'm hearing your voice, and they're talking about your background and your building. And so I get a sense that your career is something that you felt guided to do and build on, is how they're kind of showing me. But I get the Irish connection with it.
Absolutely. I'm of Irish descent. My father was born and raised and came over here, and it's because of my father and actually my grandfather, both grandfathers, but especially my mother's father, that I am doing what I do.
Okay,
so,
it feels like
absolutely.
You're building like a construction work. Like they're showing me, like, I want to say Irish builders, but it's like they're building a wall, and they're building it up, and they're laying down the stuff that you do that with, and they're sort of reflecting that onto you. So that's what I would say to you. So it looks like you had to do this and build on it. So that's what it feels like.
My father was a laborer. You hit it right on the head. Absolutely.
There you go. There you go, sister.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah,
it has been a pleasure.
You're on the right path. Yeah, you're on the right path.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you so much. You just made my entire week.
Awesome. You have to tell your kids to let you go to school and speak,
yes,
for God's sake.
Let me talk. All right. Thank you so much, Sloan. Thanks for coming on. I hope
nice
to hear from
evening.
You again soon.
Very nice
Thanks,
meeting
guys.
You.
You as well. Pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Good night,
everyone.
Good night.